Monitor now invites you to Meet the Press, America's press conference of the year, winner of every major award in its field. Today's guest on Meet the Press will be Sir Roy Walensky, Prime Minister of the Federation of Rhodesia and Nyasaland in Central Africa. He played a leading role in the formation of the Federation. We will bring you today's program in a moment.
If I am wrong in my denunciations of the rebels disguised as Buddhist monks, why do those who support them not tell publicly on what precise point they do not agree with me?
That was the voice of the controversial Madam Ngo Dinh Nu of South Vietnam, a recent guest on Sunday Night Monitor. Another well-known visitor to pay us a call was Dr. David Lilienthal.
The thing that troubles me most of all, I think, is what are you going to do with these nuclear ashes, which are very radioactive?
And still another who discussed the arms race, political scientist Alton Fry.
If we in fact have strategic superiority on Earth, it may be to our advantage to stabilize the arms race at this level, and if possible, to avoid a major competition in space.
This is Frank McGee, your host on Sunday Night Monitor. As you can see, you'll be keeping company with some of the world's most interesting people tuned to Sunday Night Monitor this weekend and every weekend on NBC Radio.
How would you like a really vital job, one that would let you make an important contribution toward a better world? You can get such a job as a volunteer in the Peace Corps. There are openings in Africa, Asia, South America for people in every trade and skill. You live and work side by side with the people of other nations. You use all your skills, develop all your capacities, and you have the great satisfaction of helping people help themselves. For more information, write Peace Corps, Washington 25, D.C. And now meet the press. Today's guest, Prime Minister Roy Walensky of Africa's Federation of Rhodesia and Nyasaland. Mr. Walensky is fighting against the breakup of the Federation scheduled for the end of this year. The interview with Sir Roy was taped during his recent visit to this country. Our panel consists of Lawrence E. Spivak, producer of Meet the Press, Max Frankel of the New York Times, Clark Molyneux of the Coles Publications, and Robert McNeil of NBC News. Ned Brooks is our moderator.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is Sir Roy Walensky, Prime Minister of the Federation of Rhodesia and Nyasaland in Central Africa. He played a leading role in the formation of the Federation and in the fight against its breakup, which is now scheduled for December 31st of this year. The issue which led to the dissolution and which now faces his country of Southern Rhodesia is the one that has inflamed all Africa, the rule of the white man, where the black man is in the majority. We'll start the questions now with Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Sir Roy, there are many observers here who believe that after the breakup of the Federation on December 31st, there's bound to be a bloody confrontation between the black and the white races. Do you think bloodshed can be prevented?
Yes, I certainly do. I think there is every possibility of difficulties and great difficulties, but I certainly do not think that bloodshed is inevitable.
How is it going to be prevented if the pressure of the black races from the north comes down upon the central and southern Africa?
Well, the position is this. You see, the two northern territories, that is, Northern Rhodesia and Nyasaland, will both be achieving independent status fairly soon. Nyasaland as soon as July, Northern Rhodesia, I should imagine, within the next 2 years. In my opinion, to talk of the question of an actual combat on racial lines between Southern Rhodesia and the territories to the north of her is, I think, at this stage, very unreal.
Well, Sir Roy, what did you mean when you spoke at the Overseas Press Club the other day, and I believe you said, "I believe the white man in Central Africa will fight with the same weapons if he is forced to do so." Now, there have been warnings that the black man plans to fight with any weapons he can, including guns. Now, what did you mean by that statement?
That was a direct reference, of course, to the decisions that were taken at the Addis Ababa conference, in which there was a call for unity of all the African independent nations, and the suggestion that fighters would be trained to attack South Africa, and I assume the Portuguese territories, and possibly Southern Rhodesia. My reference was a direct reference to that.
Well, then there is a possibility of bloodshed if that should happen.
Yes, I think it's merely a possibility, but it's a much wider scope. It wasn't a reference to southern Rhodesia. It was really a reference, I think, to South Africa and to the Portuguese colonies.
Well, can southern Rhodesia withstand attack from the north by itself, or will you have to unite with South Africa?
Oh, I think southern Rhodesia is quite capable of protecting itself, and I certainly don't think there's any need to unite with anyone purely from a defensive point of view. I certainly don't think any of the African territories will be, for some considerable time, in a position to attack anyone else, though I think it is a possibility at some stage.
Sir Roy, colonialism has become a very dirty word in almost all sections of the world. Do you think it has made any contribution of importance in recent years?
I'm anti-colonialist as well as any African can possibly be, because I've always felt that the metropolitan power has always got the best of the deal. But I think it would be absolutely dishonest not to recognize that colonialism has done a great deal of good. As far as Africa is concerned, I am convinced that many of the countries that today are independent would not have been in that position had it not been for the fact that they had been assisted by some former metropolitan power.
Well, you, I gather from that you believe that the white people who rule in southern Rhodesia are not colonial necessary.
Yeah, certainly not.
Well, now, take Africa as a whole. About 14/15 of the total population of Africa is made up of native blacks. Can you give us any good reason why a vast majority of natives should be ruled by colonial whites or by whites who live in the countries themselves?
Yes, I think there's a very good reason. I think this is a transition period. You'll realize that as far as a country like southern Rhodesia is concerned, it's very different to the west coast of Africa, like Ghana, as an example, because the white man is not a passenger as far as southern Rhodesia is concerned. He is deeply ingrained. His roots are there. We are already in the fourth and the fifth generation. We've only been there, it's true, a total of some 70 years, but we, to a very large extent, have made the country what it is, with the assistance of the African people. The theory that I hold is that colonialism had to go, and at a given stage, at some period when the African is in a position to do so, he will, in fact, be in a majority on the voters' roll and will eventually control the destinies of southern Rhodesia, like he will control the destinies of most of Africa.
We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Frankel.
Sir Roy, you've implied that Africans will someday govern in your country, but not now. This recalls some accusations in our country that you're condescending toward Africans by claiming to know them and by claiming to know that they are not capable of governing themselves. Is this so?
Well, I would argue that at this stage, I certainly don't think that in southern Rhodesia that the African is fit to take over. I don't believe I've ever argued that there will never be a day that they're not fit to take over. As a matter of fact, the present constitution in southern Rhodesia is framed in such a way that it is almost inevitable that at some stage the Africans will predominate on the voters' roll.
How soon do you think might come to the point when Africans in significant number would take over? And what are you doing to bring that day about?
Well, of course, it's not my problem. I'm not responsible for southern Rhodesia. Don't forget, I am federal prime minister. But both the former government and the present government in southern Rhodesia are doing their best to get Africans on the voters' roll. But you will recognize that, in fact, you don't have as many Africans on the voters' roll as we would have liked because their leaders have told them not to register.
Has any year ever been assigned to this? Is this a project of a decade, of 2 decades, of 5 years, of making Africans capable of governing in your eyes?
As far as I am concerned, I think it to a very large extent depends on the African himself. I'm not certain that he, of course, will like or does want our particular form of government. This is one of the big question marks in Africa. I believe that if he was very anxious to follow it up and take over on the present basis, that he would make a much more determined attempt to get on the voters' roll. He doesn't do it.
How can Africans in your country, whether capable or not by any standard to govern themselves, accept this gradual approach while their colleagues all around Africa are in fact coming to political power?
Well, it's true enough, I think, as you say, that they're coming to political power, but I would suggest with respect that you look at the results all around us on the African continent. And as an example, I would say look at the Belgian Congo, where they came to power much too early. In the southern Rhodesia, you have 250,000 Europeans, and I can say quite bluntly, they have no intention of seeing a repetition of the events of the Congo take place in southern Rhodesia.
Mr. Mollenhoff.
Sir Roy, by hindsight, do you believe that you should have been more liberal or more conservative in your approach, the approach of your political party, to iron out the problems of the Rhodesias and Nyasaland?
Well, I believe, in fact, we could have been more liberal, though I don't believe it would have had any great effect, because I am convinced now that as far as the African is concerned, because of events on the African continent, he doesn't want to share the loaf with anyone. He wants the whole loaf. And unfortunately, there is a feeling, of course, that the white man's days are finished on the continent. He's considered expendable. This is one of the reasons why I so strongly welcomed the statement by your president the other day that there should be a position for all races on the African continent.
Well, do you believe that the white man's role is finished on the African continent in the light of what's happened in other countries?
I certainly don't. I believe, if I believe that, then I frankly would have to admit that I think Africa will go back almost to the twilight that existed there 60 or 70 years ago, and I just hope that doesn't happen for the sake of the African as well as the white man.
Now, in past years, in the Rhodesias, you've had property qualifications and also salary qualifications that have kept the Africans off the rolls for voting. Do you feel that those were fair standards in the past? Do you feel that they should have been changed earlier?
Do you mind if I disagree with you? I don't think they were devised to keep Africans off the roll. They were devised to try and create some sort of test of a standard which would permit of a person to take and play a part in the running of the country. I would remind you, you know, that it's less than 70 years ago since the coming of the white man, and believe me, the wheel wasn't even known in that part of Africa 70 years ago. It's not a question of trying to keep people off, it was a question of trying to set a standard.
Well, now, do you feel that the educational standards that you have set and what you've accomplished in the educational field gives you a good opportunity of avoiding a Congo in the Rhodesias?
Yes, I certainly think so. As a matter of fact, I can give you the figures on southern Rhodesia which show the extent to which that country is making an effort to educate the African. A fifth of their total revenue, the government of southern Rhodesia, is spent on educating African children. Something like 600,000 are at school.
Mr. McNeil.
Sir Roy, if racial partnership works, as you hope it will, in southern Rhodesia, what remains of the Central African Federation, can it go on indefinitely being a buffer between black supremacy to the north of Africa and white supremacy in South Africa?
Well, quite frankly, I just don't know, but I am hoping, like any reasonable person must hope on that continent, that we're going to get to an end of this question of supremacy of either one race or the other. I, of course, have favored a policy of partnership. I don't know whether that's going to be allowed to continue on any part of the continent. The experiment that I was prime minister of has failed.
You've said that you don't know whether the policy of apartheid is good or bad for South Africa. Surely you must be very much concerned about the policies of a neighbor like that. Isn't there a moral issue involved?
There may well be a moral issue involved, but of course what I'm concerned about is trying to make a success of the country that I happen to live in and play a part in. And quite frankly, I believe that if a lot more time was spent on trying to settle our own problems instead of worrying about other people's, the world might be a lot better off. You can go to almost every part of the world and find trouble. And one of the things I'm hoping to try and do is to try and find peace and create happiness in the part in which I live.
You say you think that we may shortly see an end to this question of supremacy of either side. Does that mean you think that the South African government is going to abandon this kind of policy?
No, I can't speak for one moment for the South African government, but what I believe is going to happen is this, that in the course of the next 3 to 5 years, the granting of political independence is going to be shown up for the rather hollow thing it is. You must realize that in Africa, the grant of independence has been felt by the African people to be the heralding of the millennium. But of course, the millennium is not arriving, and there's going to be a lot of disappointed and disillusioned people. And I believe that in the next 3 to 5 years, people will begin to understand that politics are not everything, and that social and economic development also matter. And that is what I'm hoping for.
What do you think your part of Africa is going to look like 10 years from now?
My name's Walensky, not Solomon, I regret to say. I wish I could see as far into the future as that. But I'm very hopeful for the part that we live in, that if we could only stop some of the outside interference and be allowed, that is the white and the blacks, in that part of the world, we can produce a solution. There's too much interference from outside.
Mr. Spivak.
Sir Roy, the image that has been presented of you in this country is that of a believer in white supremacy. Do you believe that the white man is innately superior to the black man?
Mr. Spivak, if I was a believer in white supremacy, then I think my record is an extremely poor one. I've made no effort to maintain it. I suppose I'm one of the first white men that has had a black man in his cabinet, and I have two black men in my cabinet now. And as far as countries on the African continent go, I've already had a black man, an African, holding a top position in my foreign service. I tried, with the material available, to make the maximum use of the Africans. You must realize, of course, that I was up against a tremendous disadvantage because of the lack of education and training, due to the fact that these countries have not had the money and the opportunity to educate their people.
Well, the white man in southern Rhodesia has had about 70 years, and I think he has the highest standard of living, or among the highest standard of living in the world. Yet the black man has a very low standard of living. Why has the white man been unable to do more in the 70 years he has been there to raise the standard of living and the education of the black man?
Mr. Spivak, this question of raising the standards of other races is very much a new theme. This has developed very much since the last war. I happen to know how little interest was shown in the colonial empire by anyone, certainly as far as Britain was concerned, and the development of its people. I frankly would just not accept that the white man hasn't made a magnificent effort in southern Rhodesia to try and educate the African. Let me tell you that in southern Rhodesia, or in the federal area, there are just over 50,000 taxpayers, and only 212 of them are African. This is income taxpayers.
Sir Roy, speaking of the African leaders at the Overseas Press Club recently, you said this, and I quote, "The great powers would be wise to beware of what future use they make of the United Nations now that they know what use can be made of color." What do you mean by that?
I feel, quite bluntly, that there is going to be a ganging up in the United Nations. And I feel with the move towards one-party states on the African continent, and this is a tendency that I think is spreading throughout the world, that the great powers may well find themselves very much in a minority when it comes to voting power in the United Nations.
Mr. Frankel?
Sir Roy, the Congo affair, despite the trouble that you cited, once the trouble broke out, has been presented, or is being presented now in the United States, as a rather great victory of the Western powers over Soviet influence and for the United Nations. Now, at the time of the worst of the Congo affair, you had some rather nasty things to say about this effort. How do you look upon it in retrospect?
I look upon the Congo as one of the great tragedies of this decade. People here may consider it a great victory. I, of course, never believed that the Russians were really any threat in that part of Africa. If Russia wants to make trouble, she'll make trouble in Berlin or a place like Cuba. She'll not make trouble in Central Africa, where the logistics are a tremendous problem and the gains are likely to be very little indeed.
Do you believe, then, that the threat of communism or of Soviet influence or of Chinese arms in Somalia and others that we have heard of are not a proper excuse for the explanation of Western attempts to get along better with the Africans, perhaps even at the expense of whites in Africa?
I don't doubt that the last point that you make is correct, that many of these things are undertaken, particularly bearing in mind that the whites are expendable. But what I was trying to say was that as far as the Congo is concerned, it is one unholy mess. There is now, the lawlessness extends right over the country. It's poverty-stricken. We are today, your government and my government are helping to feed the people of the Congo, and 3 years ago they used to export food. That is the result of the Congo adventure.
But is there any Soviet or communist threat on the continent?
Well, of course, there is a Soviet threat on the continent, and to a very large extent they've achieved it in another way. They've achieved their aim because they are going to be able to deny to the West the resources and the bases on the African continent that we had in a previous war because of the policy of non-alignment of most of the new nations.
Mr. Mollenhall.
Sir Roy, you spoke about outside interference in southern Rhodesia. Do you feel any of that outside interference comes from the United States?
There's certainly no outside interference coming from your government, but there are organizations in this country that are interested in the Federation.
Well, what outside influences would that be? What types of organizations?
Well, often it's these so-called do-gooder organizations that are anxious to try and encourage particular things. You see, I believe that the educational policy adopted by a number of people in this country is not a good one towards Africa. I believe we ought not to lower standards of the men we are trying to train for leadership. And I believe that far from taking men out of the country to educate them, we should aim at trying to educate them within the area.
Well, would you say that this interference then is only taking your Africans out educating them someplace else?
No.
What else do these do-gooder organizations do that interferes with the way you'd like to see things develop?
Well, I think they make a set at all the nationalist leaders, convey obliquely that the United States is always willing to back the African nationalist. This is the kind of impression that is left. And of course, African leaders today firmly believe, and I give the case of Nyasaland as an example, that when it comes to replacing the money that is going to be lost that came from federal coffers, that the United States is going to find this money. This is the kind of belief that I think the do-gooders to some extent encourage.
And well, do you feel that this is justified? Do you think that the do-gooders are going against the United States policy in this respect?
Well, I certainly don't think that the United States intends to take up and make good all the money that is being lost, particularly in the case of Nyasaland, which amounts to about $18 to $20 million a year. But I know it's firmly believed in the minds of many Nyasaland politicians that the United States is going to make up this money.
A moment ago you said there was no real communist threat in Africa. Now, the South African government contends there is considerable communist influence in the African movements there, and there are some people in your own country who have contended that within the trade unions and some other groups there's communist influence. Do you feel that's of any significance in the trade unions and African movements in your country?
I think there is some influence, but I don't think it's of any very great significance, because I do not believe that Africa, qua Africa, except for the denial of bases and the denial of raw materials by a policy of non-alignment, is really going to fall easily or lightly into the communist more, nor do I believe that the communists are going to spend vast sums of money in trying to win them over. What do you win in Nyasaland? You win over 3 million poverty-stricken people. I don't believe that that is the communist policy. I believe that they aim at getting out any responsible element and wanting to see chaos. This, I believe, is the communist policy more than anything else. I don't believe they want to start communist parties.
Mr. Prime Minister, some of our people have referred to the Peace Corps of this country as a do-good organization. Have you had any experience?
No, I've had no experience of the Peace Corps. We've got some in the country, but as far as I know, they've caused us no difficulties.
Mr. McNeil.
Sir Roy, on this question of outside interference, what role do you think that foreign mining interests have played in the fate of the Federation?
I don't really know, frankly. I know they've had differences of opinion among themselves as to whether the Federation should continue or not. These things leak out, as you will appreciate. But I don't really believe that they've had any deciding say as to what has led up to the breakup of the Federation. I think the breakup of the Federation has really come about as a result of the British government withdrawing its support of it.
For instance, there's a good deal of American money tied up in the Rhodesian... It's the Rhodesian Selection Trust, this group which controls a lot of the copper mines in northern Rhodesia. And it's claimed that they supported you at first, and then when they saw the idea of partnership wasn't going to work, they withdrew their support and invested their money in northern Rhodesia. Do you believe that that was decisive?
Well, I don't think that is correct, because in fact they had their money in the main invested in northern Rhodesia in certain of the copper mines. And as far as I know, they've never given me any remarkable support. I don't doubt that there are many of them that doubt that the policy of partnership was going fast enough, but I don't think they've been a deciding factor. And what is more, if they think that the new regimes are going to be easy on them, I think in light of the fact that almost every African government is socialist in outlook and some of them national socialist, I think the mining companies are in for a fairly rough ride.
Mr. Spivak.
Roy, are you in favor of independence for southern Rhodesia now that the Federation is broken up?
Yes, Mr. Spivak, I am. I believe it can be negotiated and should be.
Well, now, Great Britain has indicated that Southern Rhodesia will not be given independence unless she gives the blacks of the country a much larger share in your government. Are you in favor of doing that?
I'm all in favor of the government of Southern Rhodesia, and I can't speak for them. I want to make my position clear. I'm all in favor of the government of Southern Rhodesia and the British government negotiating the independence of Southern Rhodesia. And if it does mean advances, providing they do get their independence, I think that the electorate would consider it.
Well, Rab Butler has already said, I believe, that no change, no independence until you let more Africans into the Southern Rhodesian Parliament. Now, do you think that that is possible?
I don't know that I've seen an actual statement as firm as that from the British government, but it strikes me as being a bit odd when you realize the constitution under which Southern Rhodesia lives was one introduced by a British minister less than 18 months ago.
If you don't get, if Great Britain will not give you independence, are you in favor of secession?
Well, of course, Southern Rhodesia has already got the right of secession from the Federation, if that's what you've got in mind, just the same as the other two countries have had.
The question was, are you in favor of secession?
Well, I fought it bitterly on the part of all three territories. I didn't agree with it.
Mr. Frankel, a very short one.
Does the passing of the Federation and your own retirement from the prime ministership mean a more extreme white sentiment coming to power?
Well, I think the outcome of the election in Southern Rhodesia, which put in a government that is to the right of us,
I'm afraid, gentlemen, we're not going to be able to finish the answer. I'm sorry, but I see that our time is up. Thank you very much, Mr. Prime Minister, for being with us.
Thank you, Ned Brooks.